Welcome to your deep dive. Today, we're going to be tackling the hardware that makes AI possible. All those, you know, incredible AI algorithms and models you hear about, well, none of it would be possible without the hardware.
It really is like trying to imagine composing a symphony without thinking about the instruments. The hardware is fundamental. And you've brought some excerpts from EGMD, which really gets into the weeds of this. So we're here to kind of extract the gold nuggets, if you will.
It is dense. It is really dense. So let's unpack it. One thing that struck me was just the variety of hardware involved. I feel like, you know, most people, when they think AI, they think GPUs, those, you know, those powerful chips that gamers love.
All right, GPUs are really important because they can do all this parallel processing, right? Like crunching tons of data at the same time, which is perfect for AI tasks. But this document, it's like it pulls back the curtain and you realize it's a whole ecosystem. It's not just GPUs.
Okay, so it's more like a hardware zoo than a one-size-fits-all situation. What are some of the other animals in this zoo that we should be aware of?
Let's see. Well, there are TPUs. These are custom built by Google specifically for AI. And they're designed to work hand in hand with things like TensorFlow, which is a framework that, you know, a lot of AI models are actually built on.
Yeah.
And then you've got NPUs. Think of these as the more compact workhorses. These are the ones you find in your smartphones and smaller devices. They make all that on-device AI possible.
So when my phone can, like, magically understand my voice commands, it's an NPU I can thank for that.
Exactly. And then, let's see, there are FPGAs. These are really cool because they're like blank slates. You can configure them for very specific tasks. Think of them as the custom tool builders of the AI world, you know, adaptable, efficient.
So if a company has a very specific AI need, they might go the FPGA route for that kind of bespoke solution.
Precisely. And then last but not least, you've got ASICs. And these are the specialists, right? Custom designed for one specific AI task. They might not have the flexibility of a GPU or an FPGA, but for what they do, they're incredibly efficient. It's like, you know, if you had a master baker who only baked the perfect sourdough bread, that's an ASIC.
The master baker of AI. I love that. Okay, so we've got our generalists like the GPUs, our specialists like the TPUs, our agile NPUs for our devices, adaptable FPGAs, laser-focused ASICs. That's quite the lineup. But here's the thing. The document talks about a compatibility conundrum. And honestly, that makes me a little nervous.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a real challenge. All these platforms, they have their strengths, but they also kind of come with their own language. And so making sure that everything can talk to each other, it's a major headache for developers.
So we've got all these amazing tools, but they don't necessarily play well together. What does that mean for the software developers who are actually trying to build the AI applications that we all use?
It's a constant game of catch-up. Popular AI frameworks like, PyTorch and TensorFlow, they need to be able to communicate with all these different platforms. Imagine if you had to translate your website into dozens of languages just so people with different browsers could read it. It's a huge undertaking.
Yeah, and I imagine that really slows down innovation if everyone is busy just playing catch-up and trying to make things compatible.
Absolutely. And one example the document highlights is the dominance of NVIDIA's CUDA. So this became kind of the go-to language for GPUs and AI, and now you have other companies like AMD, Intel, even Google. They're all having to play catch-up, creating these like different ecosystems.
So it's like the early days of like the internet browser wars, but with AI hardware and software?
That's a great analogy, and it shows just how important interoperability is in the AI world. If different hardware and software can't talk to each other effectively, it's like a bottleneck, right? It stifles progress.
It makes me think about something else that you mentioned, this idea of performance optimization. So let's say we solve that compatibility issue. We still need to make sure these systems are firing on all cylinders.
Oh, absolutely. You can have the best hardware in the world, but if the software isn't optimized, forget it. It's like having a Ferrari stuck in a traffic jam. You need both working together to really unlock the performance.
Okay, so let's break down this performance optimization a little bit. What are some of the tricks of the trade? What are developers doing to get the most out of these systems?
Well, one technique that's really interesting is it's called mixed precision training. Imagine if you had a recipe and you could use just slightly less of a key ingredient without really compromising the final product. That's kind of what developers are doing here. They're tricking the system into using less memory without sacrificing too much accuracy.
Hold on, you lost me at tricking the system. How does that even work?
It's all about like the nuances of how these GPUs handle data. So they can actually work with different levels of precision. And sometimes using slightly, you know, fuzzier numbers doesn't actually hurt the accuracy that much, but it saves a ton of memory and speeds things up.
Ah, so it's like, I don't know, rounding up to the nearest dollar when you're doing your budget.
Oh, yeah.
It might not be exact, but it makes things simpler without totally changing the outcome.
Exactly. And that's just one example. Another big one is optimizing the data pipeline. Remember that ballet analogy?
How could I forget the ballet analogy?
Well, it applies here too. Developers are carefully choreographing how the data flows to the hardware, right?
Ah.
Too slow, and the hardware is just sitting there twiddling its thumbs. Too fast, and you create a bottleneck.
It's like finding that perfect tempo for the song.
Yeah.
Everything has to be in sync.
You got it. And this highlights a really crucial takeaway for, you know, anyone using AI-powered tools, honestly. Even with the most impressive hardware, if the software is poorly optimized, it's like having a super fast sports car with a clunky old transmission.
Okay, so software optimization. It's like fine-tuning the engine of the AI, making sure it purrs like a dream.
Perfect analogy. Now, shifting gears a little bit, EG.MD, it also talks about some initiatives trying to like wrangle all this hardware and software chaos. And one that caught my eye was this thing called ONNX.
On NNX, right. Open Neural Network Exchange, if I'm remembering that correctly.
Mm-hmm.
But remind me, what's the problem it's trying to solve?
Okay, so imagine you could take an AI model, you know, say you trained it on PyTorch, and then just seamlessly run it on a system using TensorFlow. No major rewrites, no headaches. ONNX, that's the dream. It's like a universal translator for AI models.
So instead of developers having to like scramble to make their software compatible with every possible combination of hardware and software out there,
yeah,
they could just like speak this universal language.
Exactly.
That sounds like a game changer.
It has the potential to be huge. And not just for developers, but, you know, for the whole AI landscape, right? Faster development, more innovation, maybe even more affordable AI tools for everybody.
Now that's something I can get behind. The document also mentions this thing called MLIR. That this one went like even more over my head, to be honest. What is that all about?
So MLIR, or multi-level intermediate representation, it's a bit more low level. Think of it like creating a universal set of building blocks for AI software.
Okay.
It's like, you know, those Lego bricks. Imagine if you had a set that could build anything, regardless of the design.
Okay. So instead of needing like different bricks for different structures.
Yeah.
You get this one adaptable set that can do it all.
Exactly. And here's where it gets really clever. MLIR, it uses these things called dialects.
Dialects, yeah. like regional accents for code or something.
In essence, yes. Each dialect is kind of a specialized way of representing, you know, computations, but it's tailored for a specific type of hardware. So you could have one that's optimized for like parallel processing on a GPU, another one for the low power environment of a smartphone, and they all work within the same system.
So it's like a universal translator, but not only does it understand different languages, it understands the slang and the nuances of different regions as well. Okay, now I'm starting to see why this is a big deal. It's building bridges between all these different islands of AI hardware and software.
Exactly. And that's the ultimate goal, right? To create a more unified and streamlined AI ecosystem.
Which makes sense, because right now it does feel a bit like the Wild West out there, you know? Everyone kind of doing their own thing, which is great for initial exploration, but maybe not ideal for long-term progress.
Totally. And that's where organizations like the UXL Foundation, they come in. They're trying to build those bridges, you know, create more unified and open platforms for AI.
Yeah, the document mentioned them briefly, but I'd love to dig a little deeper there. What kind of work are they doing specifically?
So they're attacking this from multiple angles. One is like developing standardized ways for all these different components, the hardware, the software, to interact. It's kind of like creating a universal adapter for AI systems.
So instead of each company having their own proprietary plug-in socket, they can all just connect seamlessly.
Precisely. And that makes it so much easier for developers, right? They can mix and match, choose the best tools for the job without being locked into one specific ecosystem.
Which in the end just means more innovation, faster progress.
Exactly. And that's good for everyone. I mean, from the companies building these AI systems all the way to the people, you know, using AI-powered products in their everyday life.
It sounds like the UXL Foundation is doing some pretty essential work in trying to wrangle this AI Wild West, is we were calling it.
They really are. And it's not just about like streamlining the technical stuff either. It also has huge implications for accessibility.
Oh, how so?
Well, think about it. Right now, building and deploying these large-scale AI systems, it is expensive. Mm. It's resource intensive. It's really only the big tech companies, the ones with really deep pockets, that can really play in that space.
Creating kind of a digital divide where only a select few have access to the most powerful tools.
Exactly. But imagine a future where AI development is more accessible, where smaller companies, startups, heck, even individuals can leverage these technologies. That's the kind of future that organizations like UXL are working towards.
Yeah, that makes me think about something else that we touched on earlier, this idea of AutoML, this automated machine learning. Is there a connection there?
Absolutely. AutoML, that's another game changer when it comes to democratizing AI. Remember we were talking about how developers are using these techniques like mixed precision training to, you know, to optimize these AI models.
Yeah, the less flour, same great cake analogy.
Right. Well, AutoML wants to automate that. And not just that, but so much more. Tasks that used to require like really deep technical expertise. Things like selecting the right AI model, fine-tuning its parameters. AutoML can handle a lot of that automatically.
So it's like having an AI assistant that helps you build other AIs.
Precisely. And that's incredibly powerful because it lowers the bar for entry, right? You don't need to be a coding wizard or a data science guru to start building AI-powered tools.
That's fantastic. It's like those meal kit services that take the guesswork out of cooking, right?
Yeah.
You still get to create something amazing, but it's less hassle. You don't need as many specialized skills.
I love that analogy. And as AutoML technology matures, it has the potential to like unleash this wave of creativity. Individuals and smaller companies can really harness AI in ways that honestly we can only imagine right now.
So we've got these forces kind of converging. You've got organizations like UXL working on the infrastructure, the standardization. You've got technologies like AutoML making development more accessible. It feels like we're on the cusp of something really exciting.
We are, but, and this is important, we're still in the early stages, right? There are still major challenges to overcome, technical challenges, ethical challenges.
Right, right. We can't get too caught up in all the cool possibilities without also considering the potential downsides.
Exactly. But that's a conversation for another deep dive. For now, let's bring it back to this document and its core focus, the hardware ecosystem. We've talked about the challenges, the innovations, the potential. What's the key takeaway here for someone like you just trying to make sense of this whole like rapidly evolving landscape?
Yeah, I mean it's a lot to wrap your head around.
It is. But one thing that really jumps out from EGMD is this idea that the hardware landscape is incredibly dynamic. It's not just about, you know, faster GPUs or more memory. It's about this constant evolution, this push for specialization, for efficiency.
And a lot of kind of competing visions for what the future of AI hardware looks like.
Exactly. And that makes it hard to predict, you know, what the winning architecture might be if there even is one. Will it be these general purpose processors like GPUs, or will it be more specialized hardware like TPUs or ASICs, or maybe something completely different that we haven't even thought of yet?
Exciting.
It is. And it means that, you know, for anyone who's interested in the future of AI, paying attention to the hardware is absolutely critical. It's not just about the algorithms. It's about the silicon engines that make it all possible.
I think that's a perfect place to wrap up for today.
Yeah.
This has been an incredible deep dive into the world of AI hardware. Yeah, I mean, it's a lot to wrap your head around.
It is. But one thing that really jumps out from EGMD is this idea that the hardware landscape is incredibly dynamic. It's not just about, you know, faster GPUs or more memory. It's about this constant evolution, this push for specialization, for efficiency.
And a lot of kind of competing visions for what the future of AI hardware looks like.
Exactly. And that makes it hard to predict, you know, what the winning architecture might be, if there even is one. Will it be these general purpose processors like GPUs, or will it be more specialized hardware like TPUs or ASICs, or maybe something completely different that we haven't even thought of yet?
It's exciting.
It is. And it means that, you know, for anyone who's interested in the future of AI, paying attention to the hardware is absolutely critical. It's not just about the algorithms. It's about the silicon engines that make it all possible.
I think that's a perfect place to wrap up for today. This has been an incredible deep dive into the world of AI hardware. A huge thank you to our expert for guiding us through this complex landscape.
It was my pleasure.
And to all of you listening, thank you for joining us on this deep dive.
We'll see you next time when we delve into another fascinating corner of the AI world. Until then, keep asking those big questions, and we'll keep exploring the answers together.